Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to For Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Cousy.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermentable.
Archived on iTunes and Stitcher. And, of course, on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Mary, what's going on in the world right now?
Well, we just finished up Beer Week.
I have a proper hangover to prove it. It was a great Beer Week. It was amazing. This is the sixth annual New York City Beer Week. Amazing things are happening here in New York City. Breweries are popping up all over the place, and really good breweries at that. We're really excited about the New York City beer scene.
Some of the highlights. So we were at Brewer's Choice at the Wythe Hotel, which was put on by Jimmy Carbone of Beer Sessions Radio and Jimmy's number 43. And he had a lot of local New York State breweries. We met some brewers that we hadn't met before, and we caught up with a lot of people. And we had some really fantastic beer. One of the standouts was, and I'm not going to remember the name of it, but it was the one by Chris at Newberg Brewing Company. And he had this absolutely beautiful Belgian style ale that was, I think, 11.3%, 100% Brett fermented, and he used grape must, and it was amazing. And we're going to have Chris on a future show that involves grape beer or wine beer hybrids, because there's a lot of breweries doing that out there, and it's really delicious.
Very excited about that.
So that was exciting. There were some other delicious beers, but that was kind of one of the standouts and something we're going to bring to you in the studio in the future. One of the other standouts is our friends Sarah and Giancarlo Anise released their book, Beer Lovers New York. I believe they released it 2 weeks ago, but they had an event that Chris and I went to, and I'm sitting in the studio with a copy of the book. It's absolutely wonderful. It's called Beer Lovers New York. It's the Empire State's best breweries, brew pubs, and beer bars. It's full color. They have some really good pub crawls and bars in New York City, and then they go through every brewery in New York State. With maps and pictures and everything. It's a really well-done book.
It's got a couple clone recipes in the back.
One of which is...
it's the beer we did together from the Pillow Talk series.
The 508 Bangin' Berliner. And then Chris has a 508 Eddie Oyster Stout that he did as well in the back. So they've got some food recipes. Anyway, it's a great book. You can pick it up at your local beer... bookstore.
Beer store.
Although probably some beer stores will be carrying it in New York State, I'm sure. Anyway, take a look out for that. It's Beer Lovers New York by Sarah Anise and Giancarlo Anise.
And speaking of future guests, next week we're going to have Ron Pattinson from Shut Up About Barclay Perkins.
And Dan Paquette and
Martha Paquette.
So they are coming. Yeah, they're coming down, and well, across the pond, I guess, as far as Ron is. They're actually going to be doing I believe it's a book signing and kind of shindig at Browery Lane. It's actually at the same time as our show next week, so that's Monday at Browery Lane in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, at 7 p.m. But we're going to do a pre-tape for you guys
so that we can be at that event.
Absolutely. But Ron does some. I mean, he's all about historical beer, and his website is fascinating. He's done some great books and super duper interesting for geeky historical beer lovers like many of us are.
He does awesome stuff, and the books are amazing. The recipes are amazing, and to really get down to historical styles. Today's episode kind of came about from, as you guys know, Mary and I were just on this trip to Asia, and we did a couple interviews, and one of them was about fermented teas. But we're actually going to have that guy call in and do that episode live. But we were talking with our friend Tommy Harder. How you doing, Tommy Harder?
Good. How you doing?
about fermented teas, and it turns out that he used to work at a tea house.
Yeah, definitely. Back in like my earlier days as a young chef or whatever, I worked at a tea house. They had like hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of teas, and I was just really mainly just like putting sandwiches together, prepping, all that kind of stuff. But I was surrounded by all this stuff, and we're I don't really drink coffee now because of it.
So you might remember Tommy from an episode that we did last year. So Tommy is currently the chef at the Blind Tiger Ale House in Manhattan. He does absolutely amazing stuff there. And last time we had you on, you talked about kind of cooking with fermented goods, and we'll probably talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, actually, a little bit later on. The whole thing was like the over umbrella of the menu is always having a fermented element, and almost everything being a craft beer bar and having food that goes with craft beer is having that fermented element. Mm-hmm. And I've actually used tea in a lot of different ways, actually cooking, whether it's being like in a sauce or in a reduction, like a balsamic reduction, all that kind of stuff. I've actually used tea in a lot of ways because it's also a fermented product that is excellent to make. Give it give some just a little bit of like that edge that you wouldn't think about. So, it was like it's a lot of fun to kind of step out of the norm of like what you're thinking about, and then like, oh, I only drink tea. I'm like, well, you can smoke with tea. You can use tea into sauces and all that kind of stuff, and it's actually really cool.
What do you mean smoke with tea?
Oh, actually, one of my classic favorite recipes to smoke tea with is actually like, you just think that smoke, you think like smoking ribs or doing like a classic barbecue, but actually taking tea and that floor element and like doing something that's delicate, like a duck breast or a chicken breast, and smoking in that, something that's going to take not a very long time to smoke, so you're only doing like, you know, for like an hour or 35 minutes or so, but actually using the tea leaves and burning them and that smoke that comes from it, it has the aromatic flavors that permeate the meat.
Yeah.
And that gives you this a whole different, like, this aroma that comes from what you're tasting. You don't know really it's what
right.
it's coming from. But you're like, oh, but it was like the tea leaves. And tea itself, I mean, it's such a variety that it's out there. There's green, white, black, red, I mean, all that kind of stuff. And so you can actually have that floral and aromatic addition, and like really people are just, you know, tasting it, just like, oh, what's that coming from? You don't realize it.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you know teas are, I mean, certain teas are fermented. Do you know what that process is, or what?
I've actually never made tea or anything like that, but usually like, you know, tea leaves, I mean, it's the same plant, and the leaves are dried and basically kind of laid out and all that kind of stuff, but the fermentation process is usually like as they're drying it out, how they roll it or how they form it into different shapes, and there is a fermentation process that happens and different levels of it. So that's kind of where you get the difference, almost of color, I would say. Like in China, they have like 6 different grades of tea, but when it comes down to it, it's almost like a color, I want to say. Like, you know, you have your white, your green, your red, and your black. And that actually is the process of how much things are fermented, or how much the tea is fermented. When it comes to the longer fermentation, you get teas like pu'er, and like oolong is kind of like in between, and things that, you know, teas-wise that people might know more as far as the names, like Darjeeling, green, white, black, whatever, it actually kind of really depends on that process. Now, the fermentation process, as it's going, it actually brings out, I want to say, different agents that are in the tea that actually have a lot of health benefits. So almost the more it's fermented, actually the more healthy it almost is for you. Give or take.
Yeah. I should have had a lot more tea today. my post-beer week.
Well, yeah. Pu'er. Talk about pu'er. Actually, is a tea that, because it's actually like an extra fermented tea, and it's going through like more of a process, it actually has agents that's known to have hangover cure properties in it.
We like that.
Yeah, so that help expel.
That's why pu'er has long been my favorite kind of tea.
So pu'er is something that I never encountered until we went to Hong Kong for the first time 2 years ago, and lo and behold, that's Chris's
favorite tea.
So we're going to have, anyway, just to kind of give you a little bit of information about pu'er. So Chris and I visit this tea shop in what town? That's Kennedy Town, right?
In
Hong Kong.
And with our friend Derek Lamb.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely amazing tea shop. The first time we ever went in there, he actually both times he takes us through kind of how to properly you know, make tea. He's got a really beautiful tea set. And he talks about pu'er. And pu'er, people pay tens of thousands of dollars, if not more, for this pu'er tea. And it's kind of has the age of it. It's graded. But basically, instead of, you know, just being dried like some teas are, they're, you know, they go through this fermentation. It's almost like, I've been reading, it's almost like a composting process.
Yeah.
So the tea, you know, does go through an actual fermentation, but it also goes through an oxidation and, you know, kind of possibly develops some enzymes, and it's pretty interesting.
Well, here's the thing about pu'er as well. Actually, kind of more of a history about it is that it was known as the emperor's tea. So from like centuries ago, it was only drank by the imperial family. Much like forbidden black rice, it was something that was only for the higher ups. And then once, you know, globalization and all that kind of stuff, slowly, you know, it wasn't even released out of China until a couple of decades ago. And then you started seeing it, and then it was so rare, it was so fascinating, and no one really knew what it was, kind of thing. And the next thing you know, you're like, everybody's like, pu'er. Like, I got to have it. The demand, you know. Yeah. But it was the emperor's tea. And, yeah, it's it has its own grades.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of like the young, old, or, you know, different grades, like how much it's been fermented. So it does have its own animal of different flavors.
Mm-hmm. And there are pu'er collectors out there. You can buy a brick of pu'er right now, and you save it for 10 years, and it'll, you know, the value will go up, like, ridiculously. Yep.
People sell our tea kind of like they do wine and, you know, now beer as well, so.
Yeah. I try and drink all the pu'er I can as fast as I can, because it's delicious. So the pu'er taste is, with this process, it's a darker kind of flavor and got a lot of earthiness, but it can be very smooth.
For a Chinese tea, they actually, what we think is black tea, they consider red. And this is actually like the black tea for China because of its extra fermentation, the oxidization, all that kind of stuff that happens. So it's like what we think is black tea, you know, like we have white, red, or white, green, and black is more common. This is kind of like the other grade kind of thing.
You were speaking yesterday about something you made with green tea. What was it?
I actually did a brunch item where I did a watercress crepe stuffed with prosciutto cotto, which is like a cooked herb, rosemary, ham, heirloom tomatoes, and it was topped with a sunny-side-up egg, but I made a green tea sauce. So it was almost like a hollandaise sauce that I infused with green tea. And it was a green tea that also had, like, stuff added to it, like tangerine zest. And it had some other aromatics kind of stuff. That's really common with a lot of teas. Like, I mean, like, green teas, like, they throw other agents into it to give it different flavors and stuff. But, you know, I used a tea that, like, it was just herbaceous and citrusy and all that kind of stuff that actually gave a hollandaise sauce, like, a little bit different of a lift, I guess I should say.
That's awesome. Sounds great.
Yeah, it was pretty good, actually.
You got that coy grin over there.
You should have been there.
I was licking it up when I was done.
Have you ever cooked with pu'er?
Yeah, actually I have. Pu'er, you know, because it's got like the extra fermentation, it's got some funkiness.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have used it to actually smoke, but I've also used it in other variations, like doing like a balsamic drizzle where you reduce balsamic vinegar down to almost a syrup and kind of throw it to the last minute and then infuse it, and it just kind of gives, I mean, it's already kind of, the balsamic vinegar is already like a sweet and sour,
mm-hmm.
but that little addition kind of gives us a little funk of what is that, you know, kind of thing. And it's that little secret that's really, really, you know, when you're cooking, people are like, kind of like, oh, I really like this. Like, what is that? I'm like, well, I don't know.
Yeah. It's Tommy stuff. Fantastic. Well, we're going to take a really quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with Ferment About It.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hey, welcome back to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
We're in the studio with Tommy Harder from Blind Tiger Ale House, and we're talking about, so we've been talking about a little bit about tea and
cooking with tea.
Yeah, and kind of what tea is. So it can be a fermented product. Not all teas are fermented. And teas are actually one of, we've both brewed with them.
Absolutely.
We haven't had a tea show yet. We need to, brewing with tea show. That's in the works. But I've been dreaming of a jasmine honey ale lately. So
oh, that sounds sexy.
I want to make some of that.
Excited to taste that.
After getting back from, you know, our trip to Hong Kong, and, you know, jasmine, I think, is absolutely wonderful aroma and definitely. Flavor and
floral,
think, yeah.
And light, but yet has a lot of flavor still at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Pu'er would be interesting, actually, to do a... You'd have to do... So Pu'er is very earthy, for those of you who haven't had it. So I feel like it might be good in, like, a mild or a brown ale
or definitely.
A porter, just to give it kind of that extra layer. Like you're talking about cooking with Pu'er, I think the same thing would be true with brewing with it.
Because it doesn't have to be a loud flavor, it just has to be a zing or something.
It would be like a subtle...
Because it does have that kind of that earthy, like you said, like they're almost like a piney, but... you know, like ground, like mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that it has.
Exactly. And I think
who doesn't like mushroom beer?
No,
I don't know.
Oyster stout.
I know.
That's right. We have had
some mushroom beers. I know Dude CL used to make one, and then we've had one. We've had a couple at homebrew conferences in the past.
Yep, I judged a Chanterelle mushroom Belgian beer pale ale, which ended up being really, really good. The way the mushrooms danced with the Belgian. Your Belgian yeast strain was really, really fun. I didn't expect to like it. I kind of went, mushroom beer, oh God, it tastes, wow, this is really good. I don't know how they did it. And Mary's looking at me funny.
Well, no,
what are you saying?
Because I can remember a mushroom beer, and I don't remember the variety of mushroom that we had at the National Homebrewers Conference a couple years ago, and it was intensely mushroom.
The Scotch ale, right?
Yeah, I think so. It was a little too mushroomy for me, but, you know. Anyway, we're sidetracked, so I think... I would challenge our listeners to brew a beer with tea. There's a few ways you can do it. I think you have to be a little bit careful because of the tannins.
Yeah.
So you don't, although I have to look back in my notes, but I recently think I had a beer that had tea in the boil. I think it's usually best at the very end in the whirlpool, or do it in secondary, like a dry hop with tea, or to keg with a tea. That's usually how I do it, or bottle with a tea. So you can either cold brew a tea, which is a little bit more delicate, or you can, you know, steep a tea like you normally would if you're going to drink it. I think you want to be careful. If you're doing it this way, you want to be aware of what temperature water you're using to steep it.
It's usually also a timing thing,
yeah,
too.
Exactly.
Even like you're making a pot of tea, it's only said that usually, it depends on what kind of tea, but like, you know, it's only like 2-3 minutes you want to steep at a certain temperature, because if not, like you said, like the tannins, it gets a little bitter.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that bitterness actually kind of starts breaking down the actual plant product. And so it depends on actually where you add it, how you add it, all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of, I would actually recommend to do it kind of almost at the end to infuse a little bit of flavor and some that's going to be removed, not going to be too long. But you can also do a cold infusion, like you said, like a dry hopped or something like that. It would actually, I think that would be really interesting to see.
Mm-hmm.
How that happens.
And of course, I mean, once you're through primary fermentation, the alcohol is going to help kind of pull the aroma flavors, and the flavors from the tea,
course,
just like it does a dry hop. So that would be a challenge, I think. There's a lot of different teas out there. And teas, we have a lot more tea stores in New York City than we have, or, you know, kind of these tea store chains. Like,
There's definitely.
You know, like we have coffee shops. So, you know.
I go to Chinatown for mine. And there's a couple places that I know that, I don't even know the name
of
the place. But you go downstairs in the basement and they have just like these little like jars of tea everywhere, and it's, I mean, there's like thousands of different kinds of teas,
mm-hmm.
and different grades and all that kind of stuff. So it's just, it's fun to grab a little bag and you know, experiment with it, really.
Yeah. So that is my, that's my challenge, is to brew a beer with tea. Go somewhere, maybe try a tea that you've never had before. I mean, there's also herbal teas as well as, you know, the black, white, and green teas. So herbal teas meaning they don't actually have tea in them, but they're not the,
like chamomile flowers.
Yeah, or mint, yeah, or whatever.
Or ribose is a really actually right. popular one that's actually mm-hmm. from Africa, but it's a totally different plant, and that's like red tea, but it is steeped like tea is, mm-hmm. so it's considered tea. But like you said, yeah, chamomile, there's all sorts of different kinds of teas.
So brew a beer with tea, and then let us know about it.
Yeah.
How?
Ferment about it at gmail.com. Or you can also... you can also tweet at Ferment About It, or we have a Facebook page, so you know, post your results there. We'd love to have it, and then
or bring it into the Blind Tiger. Let Tommy.
That's
yeah,
true.
And then I'll make some dish to go with it.
Awesome. There you go.
That would be awesome, actually.
Speaking of dishes to go with it, you do a lot of food and beer pairing over there, and mm-hmm. you most recently did a.
I didn't get to go because I think it was on Wednesday. I was working, yeah. and then you know, we had the Brewer's Choice, but so you had this. Three. Actually, I heard about this because my friend Ron Carlson,
yeah.
Texted me. He's like, "Hey, I'm at the Tiger and I'm having this crazy beer and food pairing that Tommy came up with. It's awesome." So it's called Three Little Birds.
Yeah.
And you had Cornish Gain Hen,
yep.
hen paired with Peekskill Simple Sour, Quail paired with Trogues Cultivator, and Squab paired with Schneider Aventinus.
Yeah,
that's foul.
So tell us a little bit about how you came up with this.
Well, first of all, so we. Just started. This is actually the third, the one we're kind of doing once a month of actually doing a beer and food pairing at Blind Tiger. And this one, you know, kind of coming off of like, oh, we've always been kind of doing like a little trio, like a little something that you can get on a small plate. It's not a coursed out menu. A lot of places do beer and food pairings, mm-hmm. but it's usually like a whole like evening.
Yeah, it's a commitment.
It is.
In both time and money.
Exactly. So we want something that, like, you know, someone can have right in front of them, but have a difference. And so the three came up. So I've done like three different meatloafs one way and all this kind of stuff. And so I'm thinking of like different layers of three, like three dimensions, all this kind of stuff. And literally I was one day, like, next thing you know, Bob Marley comes on the radio while I'm in my kitchen. And it was Three Birds song. And I'm like, oh, Three Birds. I could totally do that. it tastes like chicken. I can do chicken three different ways. But I kind of get into it. I was like, oh, but there's game birds that most people really... I mean, when's the last time you guys ever had squab? You know, it's
only in
very
Chinatown,
rare.
I think. Yeah. I feel like, right?
So, exactly. It was three little birds that I could do basically kind of the same thing in the process of, like, doing chicken. But, you know, thinking of, like, how the diversity of beer and food pairing can really possibly be. And, you know, when it came down to it, it's like, well, there is beer and food pairing, but when it comes to different, like, cuisines, like Indian, Mexican, like, Latin flavors, they're, like a lot of spice heavy, all that kind of stuff. You know, beer just... calls for it when it's a beer pairing. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll take that and take the idea of doing like a chicken, an Indian dish, or Southeast Asian like Thai food dish that you could get like almost in the takeout, and then incorporate, you know, these little birds into something that was just screaming for really good beer. And what happened was, from this Wednesday, was actually three different German beers. We had a Goza or a Peekskill Sour.
Right. Which is kind of like Berliner Weisse.
Yes. Yeah. And we also had a Doppelbock, mm-hmm. and also a Maibock, which being kind of, well, this last weekend kind of screamed, I want to have spring.
Yes. For sure.
So we're hoping for springtime to come around. And yeah. So, you know, it's kind of the time for, like, box of springtime beers coming out. And that was kind of also the other influence. I was like, oh, well, we didn't, like, plan on making three German beers to go with these three different dishes. It's just like, okay, it's that time. Mm-hmm. Let's do this.
So when you first started planning this menu, did you come up with the, you know, to use these three different birds first? Or did you, and then you pick the beers, or did you pick the, you know, and have... the seasonings? Like, how did what was the order in your head?
I guess
for people that want to do this kind of thing at home in their own kitchen.
Well, my head's always all over the place, so I go from like both different varieties. Like, I mean, I'm going here from there, the beer and all that kind of stuff. But really, actually, what I did was I went from the cuisine of food first, and thinking like we're talking about Thai food, and so I was going to make a Thai peanut sauce, which actually what I did with the quail,
mm-hmm.
and I braised it and made it into a little lettuce wrap. I took Thai cuisine and thinking about like how they have a harmony of flavors, a sweet, sour, salty, and heat always balance wherever they do, like it's curries. All that kind of stuff, coconut milk, peanuts, all this kind of stuff. They have different additions, but it's always like a balance, and it has a lot of different flavors coming together. So I took that from that base and was thinking, like, okay, what kind of beers really go really well with the variety that you can get from Southeast Asia?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And which is, I mean, there's, you know, it's so many different variables that kind of come with that. So it's kind of like hard to say, like, I'm going to take Thai food and make one beer to go with that. So it becomes a partnership and a marriage of trying to find, okay, I have a balance of this and that, creaminess and the nuttiness of a peanut sauce also, but it has like citrus and all this kind of stuff that like finding a beer that's going to go just right with that as well. Also, not to like match intensity when it comes to beers, always intensity is kind of one of the things too. Like, you have some that like a beer that's maltier, and you pair it with a dish that has just blasting with like gaminess, and the beer totally gets lost.
Yeah,
so it does start from one place, but it also has to take, you know, different categories.
Mm-hmm.
So, when it comes to beer and food pairing, you got to think about what goes together. And for me, it always comes down to when we talk about beer and food pairing, you know, there's two different avenues. There's the contrast and the comparison, and the comparison always comes to aromas, citrus, earthy, that kind of thing. When it comes to the contrast, that's when we start talking about taste. And then the taste is, and there's four different main tastes: sweet, sour, salty, bitter. It's kind of like, you know, going back to grade school and the mapping of your tongue. And that's where you get, you know, sweet versus sour, sweet versus bitter. And that pairing actually really does definitely have a different... That is probably where it's easier for most people to kind of find where they want to do with, like, beer and food pairing. The aromas, you guys got to think of, like, how it smells and how it, you know, I guess it invites your memories into what you're thinking about. Now, intensity, though, when it comes to intensity, it's not a matter of color of beer, because you have light beer and you have dark beer. It's not light beer versus heavy beer. The different color of beer has nothing to do with the intensity. It's just the intensity of flavors, how malty, how hoppy it is. A hoppy being more bitter. So that is the realm where you gotta think about the actual beer itself. And it's like, oh, well, is this like a cleansing, floral, palate cleansing beer? Or is it like a maltier beer that almost kind of coats the inside of your mouth? Which, I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of beers out there that do that, whether it's light or dark. I mean, like a lot of stouts, or cream stouts, milk stout. We're drinking a milk stout right now that has... You know, it's malty and smooth, but has that palate coating.
Yep.
Shout out to Carton.
Yep.
Thanks, Jesse and Anna. So, last question before we go.
Yeah.
So, you made a dish for Brewer's Choice, and actually, I think that was my favorite dish of the night. So, you made a mac and cheese with rabbit and some other stuff.
Hasenpfeffer.
And it was delicious. So, how did you decide, of all the dishes that you could make, to make this dish?
You know what? I think I was watching Looney Tunes late night on Cartoon Network. And
not surprising.
I actually don't remember how I got to rabbit, but it's springtime. I'm like, I'm hoping for spring.
We are dying for springtime in New York City here.
And I've never made Hasenpfeffer. I've actually made rabbit in other ways, like working in past restaurants and stuff like that. And I'm like, Hasenpfeffer? I just wanted to scream like Hasenpfeffer over a whole beer crowd. Every time someone around is like, what is this? Awesome. You know, like, I just wanted to keep on doing that. Like, you know, like as I was Yosemite Sam trying to get Bugs Bunny, but I don't have the mustache, so I can't be Yosemite Sam.
Well, it worked well.
Yeah.
I was really happy to be stationed right next to you at that festival.
Well, yeah, everyone was, had arugula, of course, macaroni and noodles. And I mean, at Blantegra, we always do a mac and cheese of the day. And we have a regular side macaroni that's Cajun mac and cheese, but the mac and cheese of the day is really where we use a lot of the artisanal meats to kind of just, you know, vary it up. I mean, it's a comfort food. It's a bar food. It's American. I mean, who doesn't eat mac and cheese? I mean, that's like the quintessential. Like, what do you feed your kids? Like, it's chicken strips and mac and cheese. So we all grew up on it. And so, like, how do you, like, diversify it? You know, how do you make it different? And throw Brussels sprouts and a speck and you name it into it. And I guess I also threw rabbit.
Well,
it was delicious. And that's a perfect beer pairing. That is one of the favorite things about Blind Tiger, though, because you always have good foods that work well for when you're drinking. Lots of, you know, carbs and fat and just nourishing, but they're also really delicious and different. So, and I think that.
Well, thank you. I also like try to think also nutritious and healthy.
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah. Well, no, that's true. No, you have a lot of that too. I somehow tend to always end up ordering, you know, the mac and cheese or like
the good
the
stuff,
the grilled cheese,
the good stuff
and
that we
tomatoes.
Want to be
yes.
Be naughty with. You know?
But the Brussels sprouts are killer.
I go to the Blind Tiger to sin.
Yeah. Send beautifully.
Me too. 7 days a week.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. That is our
Tommy,
show.
Tommy, you're the best, man. Thank you so much. Tommy Thank Harder you. From Blind Tiger in New York City on Bleecker and Jones. Check his stuff out.
You got to come. So if you don't live here, if you live here and you're listening to the show, you're probably somewhat of a regular there. But if you don't, Blind Tiger should definitely be on your must do list when you come visit.
Yeah, we're one of the top beer bars in the country
for a very good reason.
Number of different, I guess I would say, different venues actually have said that at least the top 10, not the top 8,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Across the country.
Absolutely.
And I have very little to do with that. It's a craft beer bar.
But you're part of it. I mean, you're part of that picture. I mean, that's what part of the beauty is of the Blind Tiger is Thomas Harder. Thank you. Yep. Thanks for everything. Cheers. See you next week. Or hear you next week. Or you'll hear us next week. What am I saying?
On Foment About It. Heritage Radio Foment Network.
Foment About It.
Foment About It will be here.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.